Hello, and welcome to the Eve Reader Podcast. My name is Zendane, and this is episode 57, The Jovian Wet Grave. Lieutenant Hiraki Prokotin looked at his freshly shaven face in the steel mirror in his cabin aboard the Caldari cruiser Okarioni. Immaculate. For the first time in weeks, the young lieutenant had an almost forgotten feeling of excitement in the pit of his stomach. Prokotin's father had fought in the war against the Galentian Federation, and his thrilling tales of battles and bravery had made their mark on the teenage mind of Prokotin. But the war had been over for 15 years, and in all the time that Prokotin had spent in the Navy, hardly anything noteworthy had ever happened. Scrubbing, drilling, sleeping. That seemed the be-all and end-all of Navy life. But then, less than 2 months ago, a new race had made contact with the Caldari. Prokotin knew little about the race, except that they were most likely of human origins. Shortly after the first contact, the Okarioni had been ordered to the frontier where the new race had introduced itself. And now, after days of uneventful cruising through Caldari space, the ship was nearing its destination, a rendezvous with a ship belonging to the new race. Prokotin straightened his jacket for the umpteenth time and left his cabin. While walking towards the bridge, his mind once again turned towards this unorthodox mission. There were too many loose ends and unanswered questions for Prokotin's comfort. Why had the Okarioni been ordered to berth on a high-security military shipyard belonging to the Ishikon Corporation for 2 weeks before coming here? And what strange devices had been installed and then sealed in Cargo Hold B? Why this secrecy, preventing even him, the second in command of the ship, from knowing what was going on? Prokotin was not happy with the situation, and while he was aware that many of the crew members felt the same way, he knew better than to complain. With these troubled thoughts on his mind, Prokotin reached the bridge. Captain Oria was seated in the command chair on the bridge, overseeing the last course changes to the meeting point. Prokotin sat himself down in his own chair to the left and a little behind the command chair. "So what's the situation, sir?" Prokotin asked. "We should rendezvous in about 20 minutes, Oria responded. The captain and his subordinate sat in silence for a minute. Finally, Oria spoke. "Now that we're about to rendezvous, I can fill you in on our mission." Prokotin's ears perked up. At last he'd know why they were being sent here. The captain sat silent for a full minute before he spoke again. "This race we've made contact with calls itself Jove. I know nothing more of them, except that the High Command informs me that they seem highly advanced. The reason for us being here is to exchange information. It seems these Jovians regard the acquisition of information to be their highest goal in life, and are willing to pay handsomely for it." Oria chuckled, then continued. "We're giving them all sorts of information, data on social issues, historical facts, navigational charts, even some military secrets." Captain Oria was visibly upset by this last statement. "But our superiors feel that what we're getting in exchange is worth it."
"What is it that we're getting in exchange?" Prokotin asked.
"I'm not sure, Lieutenant. I'm not sure. It's some sort of a device for controlling or communicating with the ship. That's all I know."
Prokotin sat thoughtfully, scratching the back of his neck. It was still sore after the operation. While docked on the Ishikon station, Oria had encouraged Prokotin to have neural implants inserted into his spinal cord and cerebellum, saying that it would definitely further his career.
"Sir, these things we're giving them, are they in Cargo Hold B?"
"No, that, device, that's what we're getting in exchange from the Jovians."
"What? We already have what we're getting here on the ship? I don't understand, sir."
"We've got a part of it. All the vital parts, such as the cognitive pattern decoders, are missing. The Jovians we're about to meet will bring those missing parts and show us how everything works."
Prokotin pondered for a while.
"What I don't understand, sir, is why we were sent on our own to meet these Jovians."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, I think that at this early stage in our relationship with the Jovians that it'd be diplomats, not soldiers, that would be dealing with them, sir. I wonder why we weren't assigned a diplomat to handle the discussions."
"We're not here as official representatives of the Caldari state. Our orders come directly from the CEO of the Ishikon Corporation. This mission, this trade, is strictly the business of the Ishikon Corporation. Our superiors have every confidence in us to complete this mission on our own."
"By our superiors, you mean the heads of the Ishikon Corporation, sir?"
"Yes, that's correct, Lieutenant. But that doesn't make this mission any less important or meaningful."
By now, the vessel they were to meet with was clearly visible on the radar.
"Their ship doesn't look all that big," Prokotin observed.
Indeed, the vessel was only half as big as the Okarioni, only slightly bigger than an average Caldari frigate. The ship was a combination of rather dull-looking shiny green, brown, and gray. It had a most peculiar shape,
almost as if it had been grown or carved instead of built. The communication officer waved them over. "We're receiving a message from the Jovian vessel," the officer said. "It says they're coming over."
"All right. Lieutenant, you know your duty."
"Yes, Captain," Prokotin answered and exited the bridge. He went to the shuttle bay, bringing four Marines with him.
"Behave yourself, men," Prokotin said. "These are distinguished guests we're to escort. Each and every one of you is now an ambassador for the Kaldari State."
Or the Ishikon Corporation, at any rate. Prokotin had the sense to keep that last thought to himself. A shuttle, in the same colors as the Jovian ship, was docking in the bay. Three small men exited the shuttle. Each of them wore a tunic-like uniform of light brown and gray in color. Although they were definitely human, they looked very strange. Their skin was a pale grayish-yellow, almost transparent, with veins clearly discernible. The head seemed abnormally big, but otherwise their bodies were thin and feeble-looking. Prokotin couldn't help the uneasiness he felt by looking at them. The three visitors walked towards Prokotin, and one of them, walking in front of the others, addressed him.
"Greetings, Kaldari officer. I'm Anu of Jove, and these are my aides, Yed and Elas."
The Jovian spoke in perfect Chaldanese with almost no discernible accent. His movements and gestures were lithe and graceful. Prokotin wondered where the Jovian had learned such good Chaldanese. Prokotin caught himself staring into the pale yellow eyes of the Jovian and stuttered an answer.
Yes, welcome aboard the Okarioni, sir. I'm Lieutenant Hiraki Prokotin. Please follow me."
Prokotin tore his eyes away from the probing gaze of the Jovian, turned on his heel, and began walking towards the main deck. The Jovians followed, and Prokotin heard them chattering amongst themselves in a strange language that seemed to consist entirely of vowels. Back on the bridge, Prokotin introduced the captain and the Jovians. Aurea seemed perfectly at ease conversing with the Jovians, unlike Prokotin, who was nervous and uncomfortable. But while the Jovians were making small talk with the captain, Prokotin for the first time managed to see them as humans and not as outer space aliens. They even laughed dutifully at the captain's jokes, showing their full understanding of the social etiquette found everywhere amongst humans. Soon, the conversation turned to the matters at hand, and the Jovians asked to see the items they were to receive.
"Lieutenant Prokotin, bring the crate in my personal quarters,"
Aurea ordered Prokotin, handing him a security key.
"Bring it here, to the bridge."
"Yes, sir,"
Prokotin answered, motioning the four Marines to follow him. As he was leaving the bridge, he heard one of the Jovians ask,
"Has he been prepared, Captain?"
And Aurea replied,
"As much as he needs to be."
Prokotin hesitated for a moment, but then continued, contemplating what he'd overheard. "Were they talking about me?" he thought. The crate was not all that big, maybe 1 meter in length and half a meter in height and breadth, but it was surprisingly heavy. Prokotin unlocked the security bindings, and the four Marines struggled with it to the bridge. Prokotin handed Aurea back the security key, and the captain used his personal code on the crate. The lock snapped open with a loud hiss, and Aurea stepped back, allowing the Jovians to access the crate. Anu opened the crate and began pulling items out of it and handing them to his assistants, who compared them to a list they had, marking things off. Once the Jovians were satisfied that everything was as it should be, they began studying the items carefully. They fired up hologram reels and fast-forwarded through them, casting flickering lights around the bridge and making the head of the Kaldari spin in confusion. They worked incredibly fast, inserting data disks and info clips into their palm computers, scanning the contents for a few seconds, then throwing it away for another. After a few minutes, the Jovian suddenly stopped all at once and began chattering excitedly to each other. It was obvious that they were satisfied with what they had seen.
"This crate contains what we bargained for. Please take it to our shuttle,"
Anu said to Aurea.
"First, let's make sure everything we bargained for is in order."
Prokotin noticed a momentary hesitation in Anu before he answered.
"Of course, Captain. A deal is a deal. Everything according to the plan, eh?"
"Yes,"
Aurea answered, glancing at Prokotin.
"According to the plan."
The doors to Cargo Hold B had been welded shut, and it took a few minutes to cut them open. Prokotin felt his gut tighten in excitement, but also dread. He'd always prided himself on having full knowledge of every situation, full control. Now that he was left more or less in the dark, he feared the unknown. Prokotin remembered a saying of one of his teachers in officer training, "Always expect the unexpected, then all surprises will be pleasant ones." Somehow, this did not comfort him all that much at the moment. The inside of Cargo Hold B was cold and darkly lit. In the middle of the floor was a black metal object, about 4 or 5 meters tall. Numerous pipes and wires linked it with the walls of the cargo hold. The object was obviously of Jovian design,
It had the same oddly carved shape as a Jovian ship and shuttle. The Jovians walked up to the object and made a quick inspection of it.
"This is a capsule,"
Anu said to the assembled Kaldari.
"It is used to control a ship. With it, a ship as big as this one can be controlled with only a handful of crew. Smaller ships, like your frigates, can even be controlled by a single person."
"How is this possible?"
Oriya asked. He was obviously skeptical, even if he didn't seem as surprised by what Anu said as the other Kaldari.
"The controller, captain, if you like, of the ship is stationed inside the capsule. Through it, he is neural-rigged to all parts of the ship. The capsule is like one giant computer, with the captain at its core, controlling everything."
"But how can a single man control an entire ship?"
"Thank you, Captain. I was coming to that. As I said, the captain acts as the central unit in a highly advanced computer. This role allows him to access and evaluate data at extreme pace. He can easily handle the jobs it takes 5 or 10 people to do normally. It also makes him a better commander. He has a better understanding and awareness of his environment. He is not bogged down by tedious crew management issues, and frequent communication breakdowns are now history."
Anu paused, looking over the faces of the thoughtful Kaldari standing before him.
"So what's the downside?" Prokotin asked. "There's always a downside."
"Not in this case, Lieutenant. The capsule offers greater control to ships, yet fewer crew members. As you know, one of the biggest costs of maintaining a ship is training the crew. This cost is now much reduced. We Jovians are not numerous, yet we can field a very formidable fleet because of capsules."
"So what about this capsule controller? Can anyone control this thing?"
Oriya was obviously eager to garner as much knowledge as he could about these capsules.
"Not anybody, no. The controller must have the required neural implants."
Prokotin fingered the newly installed implants at the back of his neck, a grim realization dawning in his mind.
"But why this huge structure? Couldn't the controller simply be strapped into a neural chair?"
"No, Captain. The neural riggings for the capsule are much more elaborate and advanced than those you know. They require the user to be in complete stasis for efficient usage. The capsule is filled with a fluid in which the captain floats. This fluid filters out all external interferences, as well as protecting and nourishing the captain."
One of the Jovian aides now had opened a hologram blueprint of the capsule, and Anu used it while explaining how it was built.
"Also, the capsule has extremely strong armor, giving even more protection to the captain. We Jovians do not like unnecessary squandering of lives."
Prokotin thought Anu said this last sentence with an unusual fervor.
"So, can you make it work?" Oriya asked.
He had obviously satisfied his curiosity about the thing, and now wanted to see it in action.
"Yes, as long as your engineers followed our instructions correctly when building the capsule and connecting it to the ship."
"You mean this capsule will take control of the ship?"
"Yes, but we can override it easily. This is only for demonstration purposes."
The Jovians began working on various control panels on the capsule. One by one, the systems in the capsule came to life. Lights started blinking, and a low humming noise emanated from it. Finally, Anu turned to the Kaldari.
"The capsule is now operational. It is ready for testing."
The eyes of the Jovians and Captain Aria turned to Prokotin. He felt like a mouse trapped in a cage. He knew now that Aria's suggestion about the neural implants hadn't been based on friendship. He'd been cunningly manipulated into this position, and he knew it was impossible to refuse now. But why this duplicity? Why hadn't they simply ordered him to take the implants?
You want me to go into that thing, sir?"
Prokotin stammered, hoping against hope that his suspicions were false.
"Yes, Lieutenant. You have the honor of being the first Kaldari to test a capsule. Don't you feel honored?"
Yes, sir. I'm deeply honored."
The two Jovian aides were now standing beside him. Prokotin began walking forward, as if his body was moving on its own accord. He was now standing before Anu, who placed his hands on the back of his neck. Anu explored the neural implants with his fingers and stared intently into Prokotin's face. Prokotin couldn't make himself meet the gaze.
"Please stand absolutely still. We need to attach the interface."
Prokotin was too numb to answer, let alone move. One of the Jovians placed a tight rubber cap with lots of tube sockets over his head, covering his eyes and ears. Another Jovian inserted tubes into his nostrils. Finally, he felt his neural implants being connected.
"He is ready,"
a voice said. Prokotin felt hands leading him. He was lifted, and he felt liquid engulf him. He was sinking, but he could still breathe through his nose. He couldn't see, and he couldn't hear, All he felt was this cold, sticky fluid all around him. He was inside the capsule. Prokotin slowly ran his hands over the inner surface of the capsule. It was very smooth, and Prokotin found no seams or cracks. He found no controls or buttons, for that matter. The capsule was tightly closed, and there was no discernible way to open it from the inside. Prokotin was not normally claustrophobic, but now he felt panic rise within him, and he wanted to scream and run. But he could do neither. The thick fluid hindered all fast movements, and when Prokotin opened his mouth, it was instantly filled with a strange-tasting bluish fluid. Prokotin was forced to swallow it so he could breathe again. He tried to calm himself down, but when nothing happened for what seemed like an eternity, he once again despaired. He had read about people being accidentally buried alive in olden times, and now he felt like they must have. This capsule, this thing, felt like a wet grave, burying him. Is this the end? Prokotin thought. Maybe the machine has malfunctioned. Maybe they can't get me out. Then, all of a sudden, a bright light filled his eyes and a sound like rushing wind filled his ears. After a few seconds, the light dimmed down and Prokotin was able to see, but everything became deadly quiet. And what he saw made his stomach somersault. He was looking at the Okarioni from the outside. It was as if he was floating in space maybe 100 meters from the ship.
Can you hear me?
A voice said. It was Anu. Prokotin tried instinctively to speak, but his mouth was again filled with a fluid, and only a strangled croak emerged. Hello?
Hello, Lieutenant Prokotin. We can hear you. The communication link in this demonstration capsule is automatically open. Normally, you can control whether it's opened or closed. We are monitoring your progress. Can you see the ship?
Yes. Prokotin replied, simply by thinking about it. Yes, I can see the ship. But whose eyes am I looking through?
You are viewing the ship through a camera drone. Think about moving. Try to move to the right. See what happens.
Prokotin thought about this and was delighted to find the camera move according to his wishes. He swooped alongside the ship, spinning the camera in circles and zooming it out, all with a mere thought. Prokotin noticed that no matter how he turned the camera, the ship always stayed in the middle of his vision. As he got more accustomed to this new sensation, he could feel his surroundings much better. In fact, if he concentrated, he could feel the Okarioni, like he and the ship were one. He felt the engines purr in his belly. He felt the electrodes bounce on his skin. He felt the crew crawl around inside him. The feeling was exhilarating. After a while, Anu's voice came back.
You're doing very well. Now we are going to activate the audio synthesizers.
Audio synthesizers? What do you mean?
As you know, there is no sound in space. But when we were developing the capsules, we found that people wanted to use as many of their senses as possible. Thus, we added the sound. By letting a computer create three-dimensional sound, we also add to the awareness you have while in combat, for instance.
Several seconds later, Prokotin could hear the audio synthesizers kick in. He could hear the low humming noise of the propulsion system and the sudden hissing sound of course correctional thrusters. Anu came back on.
Now we test the audio system.
Suddenly a missile was launched from one of the missile bays. It flew majestically out from the ship and disappeared to the right of Prokotin's vision. Prokotin turned the camera and watched it fly away from the ship. Then a stab of green and yellow light came from the Jovian vessel, accompanied by a loud crackling noise. The weapon burst hit the missile and it exploded. Prokotin heard the explosion clearly, and when he turned his camera to the Jovian vessel, he could still hear the explosion's residue in the background. Once again, Anu spoke.
That went very well. Now for the final test. I want you to shut down the propulsion system and then turn it back on. You must open the ship control menu and use that.
Prokotin thought about the propulsion system. Nothing happened. Then he thought about controlling the ship. And then, before him and overlaying the ship, a menu appeared. Prokotin navigated himself through the menu with his mind and found the shutdown sequence for the propulsion system. He activated the action and the menu disappeared. Prokotin now saw the propulsion system fade out and the constant humming slowly died off. Prokotin now repeated the process, turning the propulsion system back on.
Well done, Lieutenant Prokotin. You have concluded the testing. Your performance was faultless.
As suddenly as it had appeared, the vision before Prokotin's eyes disappeared and darkness engulfed him. He blinked his eyes several times, the vision of Okarioni still embedded in his nerves, but slowly fading away. Prokotin then felt as if he was falling at great speed, but before he could react, he passed out. Prokotin woke slowly, as if from a deep sleep. His eyes were open and he was staring at a dull gray wall. He tried to look around, but found that he couldn't. He felt strangely disoriented. From somewhere behind him, he heard low voices speaking. He recognized the voice of his captain and that of Anu of Jove. He tried to speak to let them know he was awake, but nothing happened. Suddenly, the chatter in the background registered in his mind.
I have examined him. I am afraid the symptoms all point towards it.
This mind lock, as you call it, is it permanent?
I am afraid so. We have studied it thoroughly and found no cure. It is a shame, if I may say so.
But how do you prevent it in the first place? I mean, was this bound to happen?
Under the circumstances, yes. The only way to prevent this is with intense training for many years. That time frame was unacceptable to your superiors. You knew what was going to happen all along. You have no grounds for complaints now.
I know. I had my reservations, but what could I do? I was under strict orders.
I understand. The lieutenant performed admirably. You can be proud of him.
I am.
Silence. What is going on? Prokotin thought. They must be talking about me. What is mind lock? Then the captain and two of the Jovians appeared before him. They looked at his face, into his open eyes.
Hey! Help me!
He looks so peaceful, lying there. Is he conscious?
Maybe. Maybe not. Who knows?
It's sad to lose him. He was an efficient officer, and a valued friend. He will receive the Medal of Valor for this. It will be sent to his parents. His father will be so proud.
And rightly so. In any event, we have certain treatments that can be beneficial to him, if you are interested.
I thank you for the offer, but that's not necessary. We have very good institutions that can take care of him. He will be well provided for.
Prokotin screamed a silent curse. His fate was sealed. He had been sacrificed for the greater good of the Kaldari state, like a cog in a great big machine. Just before he passed into a murky slumber, Prokotin read the motto of the Kaldari Navy embedded on the captain's sleeve. All for the good of many. Much good it would do him, stuck in his mind for the rest of his life.
This concludes today's reading of Episode 57, The Jovian Wetgrave. Thank you for listening. If you're interested in learning more about the rich history of the EVE universe, please visit the EVE Chronicle site at community.eveonline.com/backstory/chronicles. Copyright information regarding the Chronicles in this podcast may be found at evereader.org/copyright.html. No Navy Vexers were harmed during the making of this show.